can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, my name is John Kozlowski. This is another installment of my introduction series, and this will probably be the most difficult for me, and I'm also known as the automatically deleted husband. I did something a little bit different today. As you'll see, I'm wearing a t-shirt. The NSA, the only part of government that actually listens. I bought this t-shirt several years ago, primarily to support the artist who did it. Because this is what I do. Not that I work for the NSA, but again, as what I've pointed out, one of the most penetrating lines that one person gave me in their abandoning me, because they were looking at investing in a project I was trying to do. And they said, no. Why? In the direct quote, you're on the wrong side of the NSA. For me, praise the Lord, great place to be. But I've had some difficulties. The ups and downs in my life is probably stronger than most, easily stronger than most. So after some difficulties, I took a job at Microsoft in Redmond, Washington, just outside of Seattle. So their headquarters. I had a corner office, but the way the building was shaped was an inside corner. So there was no window outside. It was windows inside into the hallways. But anyway, and I was there for a while, had a very comfortable income. And after a couple weeks, I decided, being able to go around the community, it was clear to me, because I went alone. I left my family in Birmingham, Alabama. I went alone, and I realized that this is the wrong place, the wrong culture to bring my family into. So while I was there, I started looking for another opportunity, and I found one. Enterprise, Alabama. It was with a defense contractor, Westar. So I made the move and brought the family to Westar in Enterprise. When I went out to Redmond, I flew out and then flew back. But that was the last flight I took because it was becoming quite clear, again, back in 2007, I was always tagged for extra security. So, there were subsequent opportunities to take flights, once to Baltimore, once to Philadelphia, and I didn't. I instead rented a car and drove because, there's a real good possibility I'm on the no-fly list. So it's kind of like, no, I'm not going to pursue that anymore. I didn't have the need. So I took the job, again, like the example I give of Daniel Hale, who said, okay, there's a problem here, but got sucked back in. I decided, the ideas about what defense contractors are like, now it's probably embellished. So I would be okay to go into as a defense contractor. And I was wrong. I was wrong, and I'll explain why. Enterprise, Alabama is next to Fort Rucker. This is where helicopter crews, specifically the Apache helicopter crews, are trained. What I did was software for safety concerns for the military. While we were there one evening, we were invited because we had some, obviously had a lot of contacts, invited to go to a training exercise. And there was the possibility they were going to fire off a Hellfire missile. They didn't when we were there. But we went and then we met another gentleman who's there with a bunch of recording equipment because if they did, he wanted to get the audio of it. But we were there, and while we were there, we did have an Apache fly somewhere between 30 and 50 feet above our heads. And I can tell you now from real experience, that can be intimidating. Because this is a slow-moving vehicle, and this thing is armed to the teeth. Most of the people in the church we were at were active military. They were involved, many as instructors. Especially the church leadership, a lot of them were part of the instructors of the helicopter flight crews that were there. And many had combat experience all the way back to the Vietnam War. and heard a lot of stories. So for me, my immediate experience arriving there, I arrived with a group of you know, it was a new project starting. And we had, by the time I got there, there was about 6 to 8 people already staffed up. And the manager was a self-proclaimed Christian. And after getting some understanding of the project, I pointed to a couple of design issues, you know, broad stroke design issues. And I said, you know, if we do this way instead, we'd save a lot of money. And it was, oh, okay, and it was ignored. Sometime later, a few months after being there, one of my peers asked me, would you come step outside for a moment? And we actually stepped outside because we were just off the base in an office building. So asked me to step outside, and we stood out there for a moment, and we talked a bit. And he talked about some of the opportunities he had at the time to go to, I think it was Iraq, and make a whole lot of money, basically doing the same thing he's doing there. I mean, like double the salary. So it would have brought him to, you know, 200K plus. But in the conversation, it was the idea of, you're part of the team, right? I mean, we're a team. We're doing this together. That was the dialogue I was given. I didn't understand at the time why that was happening. I don't know if he was prompted or if he did it on his own. But I didn't understand at the time, but it really has been a pivotal moment. About 6 months after there, I demonstrated, not just simply suggested, but now demonstrated a working version of some of the technology that we could do in order to save money. It was ignored. 6 months again later, I demoed it again with some enhancements. Sometime after that, the manager said, perhaps you were right. And shortly after that, without any dialogue with me, I was transferred to a different place. In this case, it was actually, I started working on Fort Rucker. I was there for several months. And again, under a manager who claimed to be a follower of Christ. But there were some events that occurred, including one day when somebody from the outside that I knew was in there, and there was a conversation of, you know, how good things are happening, how the good things that are done there. And I did make the statement that I've worked there for over a year and produced absolutely zero usable work. The following day, I showed up to work. I noticed that my email accounts weren't working. You will find my the Pinterest whistleblower video I did. This is exactly what happened to me. So I did do some inquiries, actually got it back turned back on. And then I got it was an either email or a phone call asked, would you come to the HR department? Which was off the base back in the office building. And I was handed a document saying, give us your badge and you cannot return to the office and you're fired immediately. So I know the cost of speaking too openly. What really troubled me is no questions, especially at the church we attended. No questions. Obviously, I must be in the wrong. Military is always right. I must be in the wrong. No questions. So that had obviously an impact on me directly, on my family very directly. But there's more to the story, and this has really impacted me greatly. And I've constantly asked the Lord, why are there so many coincidences here? Not a few, but some things that are just phenomenal. On July 12, 2007, I had a young daughter, Susanna. She and I, just the two of us, had a date. We went out and did some horsing around, had some fun at a play place and whatnot. It was a joy for me. That's what I knew at that time. It took years later to find out other things happened that day. That same day, the same day I was having a joy with my Susanna, and Mr. Tumal was driving his kids to school. And he saw an injured man on the side of the road. You may be familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan. He lived it out. He actually lived out the role of a Good Samaritan. He pulled his van to the side of the street downtown in Iraq. Got out of the van, went to help this injured man. And it was videoed. Another man, the two of them, helped carry this one man into the van. Then people trained at Fort Rucker, perhaps people that have known people who were involved in their training or perhaps even have been a part of the church I was in. They killed him from a distance from an Apache helicopter. Crew was trained at Fort Rucker, and they killed Mr. Tumal, and they did it with enthusiasm. But it didn't stop with Mr. Tumal. Inside the van were his two kids, and the shooting continued. Consider what it'd be like, your young child. You just saw your dad being killed. You have all these things happening around you. And the bullets are still hitting the van. And these are large bullets shot at a very fast speed. And the van is violently moving around. And the debris or the bullet themselves did hit the kids. In the van. What would it be like to be one of those kids? What was it like for the helicopter crew? They were celebrating right through the windshield. Ha ha! And their kids in that van. After the event, things quieted down and a mop-up crew showed up. There was one man in that crew, the only American in the video, who demonstrably showed love. He heard the cry of a child while inspecting the van. He took that child out. Can you imagine what it would be like to suddenly find this child bleeding in the van? Took that child out, brought him to medical care. Then he returned to the van and found what he didn't notice the first time, another child. So one person took both kids to medical care. That man is Ethan McCord. See, notice something here. I'm not talking about the family. I'm not talking about the soldier. I'm talking about the Tumal family. And I'm talking about Ethan McCord. I know these people by name. What was the attitude of McCord's peers after the fact? He was told, and I quote him, get the sand out of your vagina. That was an insult. I mean, in 2022, that may not be. But back then, that was an insult. They were trying to belittle him as a weakling. He did something very wise. He asked one of his peers to take a photo of him after the event occurred. And what you see on his uniform is the blood of the Tumal kids. Can Can you imagine what an impact that had on him? Mr. Tamal's son carries a physical reminder of the day in what happened to his leg. I mean, this is obvious. But what does he carry in his heart? What does the Tamal family carry in their heart? They lost a dad, a husband. They lost a dad and a husband who was not just simply a violent man or doing something evil. He was a good Samaritan. You may recall that story of the Good Samaritan. And you may remember an idea of go and do likewise. The Tamal girl was about the same age as Susanna that day. So on that day, I was celebrating the joy with my young girl, Susanna. We were having fun playing around. That same day, Mr. Tamal was carrying her daughter to school, probably with a similar joy. And she ended up in the van being shot at from an Apache helicopter a long ways away, watching her dad die. Mr. McCord had to exit the military. Many others involved in it were commended for their duty. Some even, you know, promoted and so forth. And the event was silenced. But there was another troubled man, young guy, who in the military had access to a lot of documents and the video. After he had those things and decided to offer them to various organizations, newspapers and so forth, some of the major newspapers. And they turned him down. They said no. However, he offered them to a fairly unknown fellow at the time, Julian Assange. And it took a little while to process and so forth, but then that became public. That put WikiLeaks and Julian Assange on the world stage, put him on the map. And you can find this video now in many places, including Kozlowski.org/collateral murder. The video is there on my website for you to download, for you to view. So are a bunch of the pictures. The other documents and whatnot, I don't have. You can get them at WikiLeaks. But they're there. That video is there, including the photos that I've shown. So what happens to the people who are involved in these things? What happens to most whistleblowers or people who are participants in events like this? It seems fairly universally they blow it. Their follow-up includes a whole lot of serious mistakes and blunders and outright goofs and sin. This includes Bradley Manning, the leaker of Collateral Murder, who now wants to be known as Chelsea Manning. He's still a man. He was imprisoned for a long time and tortured. This includes Ethan McCord, Brandon Bryant, Seth Rich, Daniel Hale, and me. What I did post the events at Westar was dumb. It was stupid, and it was wrong. What I did that got me fired, I have no qualms with. I will contend I did the right thing. But unlike the previously described events around the Bush-Kerry election, I got close to that long after the events, but I got close to where it happened, where the theft of the election happened. When it comes to collateral murder, I was closer. I was closer at the day it happened, around the people who were involved in doing it. But at the time, I was, again, unaware that it was happening. But one of the things I saw was the character of the people around me, the people I worked in. It was a collective of people thinking, we're doing the right thing. We're doing good things. We have lots of encouragement, mutual encouragement. I remember one day when I was at Westar, we had some big general come in from Washington, D.C., and went toured around. And when he went through the place I was at, you know, everybody stood up and we listened to him blabber for a while. And all it was promotional fluff. Oh, you're doing a good job. We're saving lives. We're rah, rah, rah. It was absolute mush. It was disgusting. And I even thought so at that time. And may have expressed it at that time, I don't recall. So that rah, rah, we're doing the right thing was commonplace. But don't you dare question any of this. Not at all. If you question something, you're unpatriotic, you're un-American. While I was there, I heard from many of the helicopter pilots, people who actually fought in combat all the way back to the Vietnam War, heard many stories about some of the things they did, some of the events. You know, the one I was really fascinated with is the one gentleman who in Vietnam, he didn't explain the circumstances, took a helicopter and actually flipped it and flew upside down for a brief moment and flipped it again. You know, and it's kind of like what I thought at that point was, okay, you may be able to be a fair helicopter pilot with a little training and whatnot, but to do that kind of maneuver is not only the training, but you have some skill level, you have some innate talent. And I thought, okay, I can see, because a lot of people talked about that. One of the gentlemen I was there, he talked about some of the things that he did in 1976. Because a lot of people there also would do this odd thing of jumping out of perfectly good airplanes and, parachute down. And one of this gentleman said, he had a moment of, his 15 minutes of fame or 15 seconds. Because on July 4th, 1976, he jumped out of an airplane, parachuted down between the Twin Towers in New York City, had American flag draped below him, a weight, and it was, flying. So the guy who did that, I met. So, I mean, these are people who again, it's the raw mentality. We're part of the team. We're go America. I had a Christian brother who was my manager, and he said, you are right about the design changes to save money. And then without talking to me, he had me transferred to another department. I was a troublemaker. The next manager, another gentleman, Christian, worked for several months there. And when I stated the truth, without talking with me, he fired me. When, in the following weeks at church, no questions. My assumption is, if the military or a defense contractor fires you, you must be wrong. Right? Because if we question you and you point out something that, oh, you were fired because you did something that may have been in obedience to Christ, then I may have to question, is what I am doing involved in the same organization, obedience to Christ? We don't want to go there. No. We don't want to go there. No questions. So I had no involvement with the Bush-Kerry election, but I do know how it was stolen. I can explain the technical details. And I have the know-how to have done it myself. This is my field. I know how to steal. I know how to defraud. But I'm a follower of Christ. I was not involved in collateral murder, but I know a lot of people who were indirectly involved, perhaps played a very serious support role, such as, at minimum, training the helicopter crew, and perhaps to a degree, participated. I did point out how we were cheating the taxpayer. We were cheating the U.S. taxpayer, not out of a few hundred dollars. It was at least $2 million per year. Complete waste. And when you point that out, because remember, what happens if I can take a $4 million project that's going to take maybe a couple dozen people or so and turn it into a $2 million project that only needs a dozen people? What happened to that dozen people? That dozen high-paying jobs? Do you think those people would be my friends? Would they rather waste the taxpayer money? After all, it's only a few million dollars. It's easier to waste that money because then I get a good job. And I feel rah-rah, what I'm doing is patriotic. So if you're one of the beneficiaries, either directly or indirectly, because this wasn't the unique aspect there at Fort Rucker. It was just one that was called out by me. So, you know, a year or so after the collateral murder event, my father-in-law, Jim Cross, stated to me while we were in his home visiting that I should distance, his direct quote, "You should distance yourself from Julian Assange." I didn't, and I won't. Not distancing myself does not mean I endorse his lifestyle or everything he does. But he's a human being created in the image of God. The organization has an impeccable record because nothing thus far has ever been shown to be false. And it's pretty unique for any larger media organization to have that kind of record. And he's being tortured on behest of the U.S. government. I will stand with him, even though he has shows no evidence of being a follower of Christ. Because, again, he's a human being created in the image of God. In 2012, I started a website called Shofar Leaks. I had some interactions with, I think, three parties in Europe. Actually got some documents. The technique that I was using is a different model than WikiLeaks. Because it's technology based. It's not a crew of people. Got that initial contact, but it never picked up. So some years later, it was shelved, and I let the domain name shofarleaks.com expire. On April 11th, 2019, because of some backroom dealing, London police, who were guarding the Ecuadorian embassy 24 hours a day in case Julian Assange exited the embassy because he was granted asylum by the Ecuadorian government. The Ecuadorian government changed. Terms changed. They made an agreement with the U.S. and with the U.K. And that day, that morning, Julian Assange was forcibly removed from the Ecuadorian embassy. It's caught on video. A few hours later, because of the irony of the timing, I just happened to see it within hours. And a few hours after that, I had a video online. It was my fifth installment of Is Manning the Next McCorvey? Included, you know, pictures and videos of that day. That weekend, after giving it some thought, I reacquired shofarleaks.com, and I still have it today. It remains dormant. But I have the know-how. And it's a radically different model than WikiLeaks. And I would suggest, in a sense, it's more dangerous. But it remains dormant. But if a connection comes where I can do that, it will have my full attention. Because one of the events that really got to me is a dialogue with a Muslim gentleman. I think he's in Belgium. And what hit me was, no, I believe, as a Muslim, he's following a false god. And he has no hope. But that does not give me any license to kill him, to hate him, to destroy his family, his communities, and things of that nature. As a follower of Christ, I'm called to love him. Not to join him, but to love him. And when possible, point him to Christ. That has had an impact on me, and it's what actually relates to the Shofar book project, but that's something else. So I've learned a lot since that time about deception. You know, from literally the book Propaganda, written by Edward Bernays, and what it is to get people in a collective. And that you get people in a collective, you offer them benefits, but you cannot violate the terms of the collective. If you do, there's a cost. Especially if you're striving for obedience to Christ, there's a cost. It's the red button question that I mentioned from Catherine Austin Phipps, who made that proposal. And I will contend, I will stand on the idea. If you're a follower of Christ, there's no question, you push the button. It is a problem to be involved with or be close to things like this. There's a whole lot of things like this. I won't list right now, but there's a whole lot of things like this. So you have to consider. Most people are not shooting large caliber guns at little kids in a van far distant away and saying, nice. Saying afterwards, oh, there was a kid there. Well, that's what you get for bringing kids to a battle. It wasn't a battle. It was an act of mercy by Mr. Tamal. And they did what they did by killing him was cold-hearted murder. So you can be close to something that's high profile like that. You could be a layer removed, two layers removed. Or you could be right involved with something that's fairly minor. Stealing a few $1 million. Stealing a few $100. A sin is a sin is a sin. Do you have the character to say, no, even though my collective is doing this, I won't because I'm a follower of Christ. And I will not take part in the works of darkness, but rather expose them. Ephesians 5:11. But there's the icing on the cake. This event happened July 12, 2007. Mr. Tamal died. His family was destroyed. 5 years to the day, July 12, 2012. My family was destroyed. My wife abandoned me. My lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore, I love you and I want you back.